Hey there, I am your host, Mandy Trapp, and you are listening to the Waking Up Human podcast, a podcast dedicated to exploring the complexities of the human experience. From the biggest questions of existence to the smallest moments of daily life, it's here that we will dive into the depths of what it means to be alive and to be conscious. Join us as we explore the many facets of being human, from the science of the mind and the body to the art of living a meaningful life. And so whether you consider yourself a philosopher, a scientist, or just a curious person looking for some deeper understanding, I know you'll find something here to enjoy in this podcast. So sit back, relax, and let's wake up together. Sarah Salter Kelly is a modern-day medicine woman, an author of Trauma as Medicine. She utilizes the raw, compounded teachings of her life experience to uplift, to empower, and to guide others. Her wisdom is authentic. It is embodied and very hard-won. And it's generated through years of integrating the tragic homicide of her mother and forgiving the perpetrator, alongside 30 years of studying personal growth, energy healing, shamanism, and earth-based traditions. Over the past 16 years, she has run a private healing practice. She's facilitated retreats in Canada and in Peru. She's taught trauma-focused and shamanic healing workshops, and she's presented at numerous conferences and public events. She is presently excited about the emergence of psychedelic plant medicine and its capacity to generate healing. Sarah has moved back to Alberta in Canada and has opened her clinical practice in Edmonton at Le Soleil Health and Wholeness in the Roots on White building. Welcome, Sarah Salter Kelly. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Waking Up Human podcast. I am your host, Mandy Trapp, and today I have, I'll say my new friend, although it feels like a bit of a kindred spirit. Yes, Sarah Salter Kelly, who is a medicine woman through and through. She has been working with, I will say, trauma-focused work for the last 30 years, but really it's just digging into the deeper layers really that prevent us from living an absolute inspired existence here as spiritual beings having a very real sometimes human experience. And before we really jump in with this, Sarah, I just wanted to kind of get everybody maybe a little bit more excited and intrigued about our dialogue, because I'm not sure where it's going to go. But my intention really in reaching out and having Sarah on this show is around the rise of the use of plant medicine. Plant medicine, I have been really witnessing it have this incredible snowball effect over the last decade, and a lot of people going on different journeys. So if it's ayahuasca, if it's psilocybin, if it's bufo, if it's, you know, ketamine, and now we're actually beginning to see that there is some in more therapeutic environments, is that there is some legalization that's taking place here in different provinces in Canada. We have some of the same things happening in the US, but there's a lot of other ceremonies that are happening, I would say, behind closed doors. And we're going to talk about all of it today. We're going to talk about the good of it, the bad of it, the ugly of it, but really with the intention of developing, hopefully, a lot more knowledge, education, and respect for the true value that these medicines bring. And I know that I've had my own personal experiences. I don't necessarily facilitate these, but these types of experiences and ceremonies, but who better to talk about it than the one and only Sarah Salter Kelly. So welcome, Sarah. Thank you so much for being here today for the first time.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Mandy. I'm very excited to be here. I was thinking while I was listening to you speak, the piece that you said about we're going to talk about what's behind closed doors. Well, today we're going to open some of those doors.
Yeah. Right. And I would also just invite anybody to in the show notes of this podcast is that there is an opportunity for you to jump in and ask questions. So even though we are pre-recording this, you're listening to this as a recording, please, by all means, shoot those questions back to us. I'll get Sarah any of those questions that she can ask. There will be all of her contact information in those show notes as well. And then we will have a lot of other resources that will be attached to this as well. So for anything that pops up for you question-wise, or if you're looking for additional resources and supports, please know that everything that Sarah and I talk about today will be down there. So don't forget to check that out. Okay.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Miss Sarah, let's go back. Can we go back to the start? Can we go back 30 years ago, maybe? I shared your bio, but maybe just give everybody here who's brand new to you, which might be a huge majority of the people listening. Who are you?
That's putting it into a Coles Notes version. I was born on the not far from the banks of the North Saskatchewan River in the city of Edmonton, Alberta, once upon a time. And what I'd like to speak to most prominently in reference to our conversation about plant medicine is how they have this capacity to deepen our connection with who we are and access that voice of wisdom inside of us, which I think that we're all born with. And so often in our experience of being human, we lose sight of this. I happen to be lucky, I guess you could say, in that I was initiated into the use of plant medicine at a really young age. So at 16, 17, and 18, I was using a lot of psilocybin and LSD. And what I always loved about my experience with it, though it wasn't necessarily an intentional sacred journey of communing with spirit, that always ended up happening. Even if it was through dancing in the clubs or through the walk home or through some of the patterns that I was able to watch and what was happening around me and my response to it. And so I'd very much say that the teachings that can come forth from us delving into plant medicine offer up such an expanded awareness of who we are. And so that was some of the foundation of my own personal growth journey. And Mandy, my mother was a life coach. And so I grew up in a household in the, you know, 80s and 90s where personal growth was, happened at the kitchen table. You know, Louise Hay, Shakti Gawain, Wayne Dyer, any of those, you know, Deepak Chopra, any of those initial teachers were common conversations. So the idea that we can heal anything, the idea that we choose our reality and that we are co-creators of the universe were foundational.
Yeah.
And at the age of 20, my mother, Sheila Salter, was murdered in Edmonton, Alberta, and just off of 124th Street. And some people who are listening will know that the book I wrote, Trauma as Medicine, is connected to sharing some of that story and then going a little bit further into how we can create transformation for ourselves. And I'd say very much that history and personal growth and that connection with myself through plant medicine really brought me home to, with a willingness to do the work that was necessary to initiate freedom. And so as challenging as anything was that came before me, as hard as it was to go through the visceral experience of dealing with homicide and dealing with the justice system and a perpetrator and all of those kinds of things, what was more challenging for me was not doing it. Right? That was even worse. It was like, yes, here's this really hard thing. However, I don't want to live my lives in chains where I am limited with fear and unaddressed trauma. It's easier to go into whatever it is that's haunting us and discover how we can come out on the other side than stay stuck. And so that was another huge initiation that really led me on a journey of, you know, studying shamanism. I went to Peru on 8 occasions and worked with Indigenous healers in the high Andes as well as in the Amazon, worked with various teachers throughout the United States and Canada, studying energy healing, studying any practice that could support me and eventually my clients. And how do we come home to our body? How do we be our own authority? How do we trust in the sovereignty and the wisdom that is within us without needing someone else to do it for us or to tell us how? How do we set some of those foundational pieces that we can trust that whatever is coming up before us, we are capable of addressing it, that there's nothing bigger than the light that we have inside of us. Mm. And so that is the Coles Notes version.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. She says with the laugh, oh my goodness. I am so sorry that you had to lose your mom in that way. Especially I can't even begin to imagine, nor will I pretend. to imagine what that must have been like for you to be that traumatized. And at the same time, you know, the thing that I'm kind of hearing right now is just, I don't know if you, I mean, some people might call it a coincidence. Sometimes I call it synchronicity or synchrodestiny, that your mother had already prepared for you. You talk about foundation and this foundation for understanding perhaps life beyond death.
Yeah.
Right. And yes. Understanding that perhaps, you know, maybe she was preparing you for something that she knew inherently, soulfully, at some point in time that she wouldn't, you know, have maybe a really long life, but she prepared you in those moments to be perhaps a little bit more aware or conscious as to where she is when she leaves. But the thing that you said that stood out is, regardless of how much we know, is that we still have to do the work, and it's almost more painful to not do it and to really just kind of sit in the grief and in the trauma. Yeah. But I feel like you knowing and understanding that there was something beyond all of that, perhaps, and maybe I would ask you that question, did that create for you a sense of maybe safety and certainty kind of on the other side, that it allowed you maybe the grace to be able to move into some of those more painful edges?
Definitely, Mandy, that deep awareness, some of which came through plant medicine, some of which came through how much time I spent playing outside in the forest as a kid, that there's something more, and that whatever's happening in my life isn't who I am. So I think a lot of our journey in addressing trauma is also going to take us to come home to the awareness or the inquiry of, who am I? Am I this thing that is happening? Is there something more than this? And I very much believe that I came to this planet to learn the lessons that came through one of many of my mother's homicide, of coming to a place of shared humanity and compassion for her murderer, who suicided in prison after being found guilty of murder one, 1997. Getting to know his sister, and we have done talks on reconciliation, embodied reconciliation, because he was First Nations. And so it's very much, how do we make a decision to go into the hard stuff, to recognize that the hard stuff is where our teachings are? People will often, you know, go through that, the great, you know, the despair when we go through trauma. We have to unpack all of our ideas of who we thought we were to figure out which of them actually resonate, which of them are actually rooted in our being. And one of those is often, is there a higher power? How could these things happen and there be a God at the same time? And yet what I invite people to consider is that what we do with what has happened is what brings us home to our connection to source, God, spirit, you know, insert your word of choice. It is those things where we find it.
Yeah.
And if we're willing to allow our hearts to be opened by going inwards, then we never know what can happen next, right? And the liberation that can actually come through going into that contracted energy.
Mm-hmm. So can I just ask you, because I know that there's a lot of people listening to this right now and hearing you speak to the perpetrator's sister, I don't know, did you ever have a chance to speak with him?
No, because he'd suicided in prison.
He did. Okay.
Yes, because I created my own ceremony.
Right.
And I go into that in more depth in my book, where in 06, about 10 years after she died, she was murdered in 95, I realized that I was angry.
Yeah.
And so it took me 10 years. You know, it was right after my son was born. And I swear to God, Mandy, his birth opened this portal inside of me. And I was, you know, 30, where it said, okay, here's some shit you have to look at. If you're gonna move forward, it's up to you.
Yeah.
So at that time, I realized that I was angry, and also that I could feel him around me quite a bit. And that had gone on for a couple of years. And initially I would use all of my energy to push him away, right? I don't want to think about you. You're hijacking my experience right now. It would often be during moments of intimacy, such as when I was nursing one of my babies or making love with my husband or having a heart to heart with a friend, almost as if he was saying, you know, you're having this deep thought, now I want you to think about something horrible, right?
Right.
And So at about the 10-year mark, I realized that pushing him out of my mind wasn't working. And that it also did not align with my beliefs around sustainability and my beliefs around integration. And I thought, okay, just a minute here. Mm-hmm. What if instead of pushing him away, I call him in? What if I intentionally bring him as close as I can get? Yeah. You know, and I brought him close and do something about it. And so I created my own ceremony that lasted about 9 months. And I didn't know it was going to take 9 months. It's just how long I took. Yeah. And this aspect will often come up when I'm coaching or supporting groups, especially women with children, and you think you don't have any time. But when I did this ceremony, you know, my son slept for an hour and a half in the morning and the twins were in kindergarten. And I was like, I have 2 hours or an hour and a half. But we always have the time that we need if we put our intention in it.
I agree.
You know, and so long and short of it is over the course of those 9 months, working through my own prayers and with the elements, earth, water, air, and fire. And I addressed any feelings that hadn't been expressed. And I had an unexpected vision of compassion and shared humanity. And so, and again, this is a very short version of it. And then eventually he also became a spirit guide.
Yeah.
So I've talked to him lots.
Well, and you know, as somebody who, I don't know, I don't love labels, I don't really understand all of them, but I would probably say that I'm clairvoyant and I'm a medium and I always have been, and I've always had quite a close relationship with spirit world.
Yeah.
And it is very, very fascinating, I think. And I've had my own experience of an awful experience of being victimized and perpetrated in my lifetime. And I actually realized, and I'm just going to quickly share this story right now, because you don't know this story about me. And a lot of people don't know the story about me, but just a couple of years ago, I realized how this has been years and years and years that I have carried this energy. And it's like, you know, the 95% of me that is a loving, kind, compassionate person who can forgive and, you know, rightfully connect to any human being on the planet, this other 5% that had been so traumatizing my entire life. We're not really whole and complete and compassionate if we can't hold that for the other 5%. And so I had gone into my first plant medicine journey with the intention of doing, as you said, facing him head on. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing that ended up happening, Sarah, was that, and I feel it in my body actually right now, as I'm sharing this with all of you, is that I actually went into such a fear state because I was still so, so, so afraid of him, that I actually died. Yeah. Like I died a physical death. So the other two who were sitting with me quickly ran. I stopped breathing. I had passed out, smashed my face on the ground, ran, and they thought that I was ODing, or that there was something else that was in the medicine. It was MDMA. Even though it had been tested, you know, 3 times, that everything had been weighed out for me perfectly. Mm-hmm. But I had totally and completely, I was gone. I had flatlined as far as they were concerned. Gratefully, they didn't give me, you know, the naloxone or whatever it was. But during that experience, what I notice is the first thing is that my soul ejects out of my body. I'm sitting, staring outside of myself at the whole scene on the ground of them trying to bring me back. Well, simultaneous to that, here I was, what in like the shamanic world they call the bardos, as I was in spirit world. And I could just see in the darkest form possible, I could see him. Almost as though he was a demon, I suppose. Not that I had ever really held a vision around what a demon was in my life, but just really on all fours, just circling around me and circling around me. And the amount of fear that I felt at that time was stronger than anything that I could ever describe in my life. And in that very moment, I heard the voice of one of my best friends who had passed just a year before that. And I heard him call my name and he said, Mandy. And I looked up, and it was that moment that I connected with absolute unconditional love, because he was my still is, you know, my soul brother, my, like my guide, my light. I was quickly thrust there, which to me was the crossing over. And it was literally going to that place. And then experiencing, as a lot of people who have NDEs will say, you know, it's a love that you can never explain, because while we're in body, we think that we know what unconditional love is, but I will tell you that we don't. I never knew what that was in human form until I experienced that. And then when I finally made the choice and I saw them like trying to get me back. And, you know, my soul brother at the time saying, Cody, like, Maddie, you got to go back. And I was like, why? It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not going back through that gateway, through that fear, back into that body, realizing, and he always used to say, because he's Korean indigenous, he's like, careful what you wish for, Mads. And I had wished to be able to confront, you know, this perpetrator. And there I was, you know, in full confrontation of him. But I remember dropping back into my body and taking that first breath back and having that thought of like, why did I come back to this? And I realized, and I could cry telling you this right now, Sarah, as I realized that as long as I was constantly seeing the evil in him, is that I was holding myself as this victim and as this complete powerless soul here on the planet. And I wasn't allowing myself to also see beyond that line. Now, the interesting thing is that he was family. And I was never able to see beyond and past that. But I then went through my own ceremony, and I'm not sure how long that took me, but probably a year. So I appreciate that you said nine months for you. It probably took me a year. And close towards the end of that year, the one who began to come to me was my great, great grandmother from down that whole line and from that down the whole side, and connecting with her. And she was a shaman, a Ukrainian shaman, this incredibly powerful woman who I was denying all of this energy and all of this power and all of this love. But I was also not in the understanding of why he was the way that he was and what made him that way. And so then I could go back into shamanic journey the way that I journey. And I said, show me what caused him to move into such a state of psychosis. And I could see the abuse and I can see everything that he endured. And I was able to go through my own experience of reconciliation with that. And even though my body's still, you know, kind of shaking, just thinking about that whole entire experience, not that I'm going to run back into it and do that again, but that's where the plant medicine took me to a place that I know for a fact that I have done so much therapy. I've done so much breath work. I've done so many meditations. I've done all of these things. But when I touched that point of such deep pain and trauma, I would always stop and back myself out because it was too painful to go there. And the reason why I actually physically had to die that death is because as soon as I started to feel myself going, I couldn't stop it. It's like, now he's going to get me, right? I can't stop it. And I am so grateful that I had the support that I had there to help me at that time. But even, you know, fast forward from there, they didn't, even though that, you know, my two good friends who were the sitters, they have sat for probably 200-300 ceremonies before. They didn't know how to help me to unpack that on the other side. I am grateful that I have teachers and I have healers beyond just even myself in my life that were able to come in and to work with me over the last 2 years to help me to move through that. And it was one of the things that you and I had said, you know, before I had hit record on this. I know that there's so many people on this planet that hold, you know, big T trauma, little T trauma, that we all hold these levels of experiences deep within the somatics of our being. And when we start to touch these things in the way that we do, and plant medicine gaining in a lot of popularity, is that we can actually go deeper into touching this. I think sometimes my concern, is not just about the actual physical experience and what if that happens, you know, like who's going to be there to help to bring you out and to walk you through. My concern is on the integration part of that afterwards. And it's something that I really would love for you to take a little bit of time and kind of speak to all of that, if you will. And thank you for listening and for everybody to hear my story. I've never really shared it publicly before, but I think it's time. Yeah.
Thank you for your share, Mandy.
Yeah. Thank you.
When I reflect on my 20s, I would say my 20s, I was integrating the whole decade. I was integrating the plant medicine experiences that I had at 16, 17, and 18. And I didn't actually use plant medicine again after 18 until I was about 31, 32. I knew that a lot of what I was seeing and experiencing was real, and I wanted to learn how to do that without anything in my body. And so throughout that time in my 20s, I was then integrating my mother's very brutal Raven homicide, becoming a mother myself. And so much of that was that integrating. How do we bring this home? How do we live this? How do we be conscious about whatever visions have come to us and practice them in the day to day? And then as I moved into my 30s and now 40s, I began working with groups and supporting people in that integration process. It's one that many of us, I think, in our Western culture struggle with, because we want the answers and we want the quick fixes and we want the things that we can purchase that are going to give us the guaranteed outcome. And working with plant medicine, people do not always realize is that this is a vision quest. You are embarking on a sacred communion with spirit, a sacred communion with your own soul and your own being. And that's going to take however much time it needs to integrate. And we need to bring our intention to apply awareness to whatever some of those teachings are that came forth through our visions into how we're living each day, which means that the work doesn't happen in your ceremony or in your retreat. Though there's work, right? Yeah. And things that can be challenging. The actual work is that when we come home to our day-to-day lives and we recognize the dysfunction in our relationships or in how we live, and we make a conscious choice to change that. If we have actually created our reality, if we actually are not victims in any shape or form, then we must make the steps to contend with the reality that we have created when perhaps we were feeling like victims, and bring that intentionality to the decisions that we make, to, again, the energy and the relationships that we have. And so integration is very much that lived experience of day-to-day, sometimes rigorous, how do I be with what I've discovered about myself?
Yeah.
You know, and how do I hold it? How do I treat it with so much reverence because it's holy?
Yeah.
And bring that awareness of what is holy into what I'm doing each day without like a charged nervous system where it's like, fuck, I have to do it all at once. Oh my God. Yes. I saw all these things. I have some big changes to make. Remembering that spirit comes from a place of unconditional love and grace and presence and beauty. So however we're bringing it home needs to be rooted in that as well. Not in like self-shaming inner critic of you're not working hard enough. You have this vision, you know, however long ago. And you know, we need time to integrate. And that's not even just from plant medicine workshops or experiences. I've taken another really deeply powerful spiritual training or had my own intentional ceremonies that did not use plant medicine that I had to integrate for a long time.
For sure.
And so
for sure.
It's period. We're taking the existential experience of what comes through our soul and through spirit, but then we're having to apply it into the mundanity of daily living.
Yes.
And so that's
why I call this waking up human.
We got to wake up human.
We're in dream state of the spirit world, but then we wake up and we're like, oh shit. You know, I'm still married to this person in the bed next to me. I still have this body. I don't mean to jump in, but you just like totally kind of like brought me back to something that is a really important thing that I hear from a lot of people. Obviously I don't facilitate plant medicine journeys, but I have been leading transformational breath work for 20 years. And it's very similar. I mean, we access very similar states of consciousness, sometimes exactly the same.
Yes.
And when we are in expanded states of consciousness, it's, you get to feel, like actually feel the unlimitedness. You get to feel like the ecstatic love. You get to feel all of these things. And people are like, yes, this is amazing. Oh my God. Like, I'm going to go and tell everybody that I love them. And I'm going to say, I forgive you. And I'm going to do all of these things. And they feel like that during the retreat, during the experience, that night when they go home. And then the next morning when they wake up, they're like, shit. Yeah. It's like a big thunk. You know, it was me coming back into my body like a thunk. I'm back in the heaviness and the density of being human. And I keep saying, but that is what you chose. Mm-hmm. So how do you then help your clients, your students, to reconcile the spirit and the human parts of themselves post having some of these bigger, expanded, just experiences, yeah, I suppose, yeah, for lack of a better word.
A lot of that is through meditation or shamanic journey. So a lot of it could be through, even if I'm doing a private session with somebody, is how do we go into our bodies and feel what is present? So much of it is like, let's not override what we're experiencing.
Right.
You know, like let's not paint it all up pretty in order to create our idea of a spiritual experience. Let's actually be with where we're at right now. Feel into it, notice it, recognize mm-hmm. what is present, and then attune with, okay, well, here's this vision over here, which is more aligned with what feels true for you. What are any of the obstacles in the way with integrating? So it's mm-hmm. mostly awareness, inquiry, and going inwards, engaging the felt sense. And sometimes I'll use, again, if it's one-on-one, I'm going to be using my drum or my hand pan or different sound tools to help people in going inwards. So with that deep awareness, what is present? Is this how I want to be living my life? What is within my power to address? What do I need to know about this? How can I apply it in the day-to-day in a practical way? Sometimes people will open to some of their spirit guides or power animals or visions, and they'll be like, wow, I'm standing on a mountain and I can see that I'm great scroll and I'm doing this. And it's like, okay, that's great. Now also ask for another vision that shows you how you can do that in the day to day.
Yes. Right?
Like you need something tangible.
Okay, you need it
tangible.
You're
doing dishes and you see yourself, you know, it's like, it needs to be tangible. The ecstatic is profound and we need that. And we came here to have a human experience.
Absolutely.
Now, this is actually what we came here to learn about. I don't believe we're supposed to be enlightened until we die.
Yes.
You know, we already are enlightened. We came here to figure out what it's like to be informed. And so let's be informed. Inform.
Oh, I love that. I've never even thought of that before. Yeah. Oh my gosh. But I love that you said, I'm just going to circle back to asking ourselves these questions. And the main question that stood out to me is, what is my obstacle?
Yeah.
What is my obstacle? Because I experienced that for myself personally is when I go into journey, I'm like, oh, I can see myself, you know, connecting with that one person who I really, really struggle connecting with. Yeah. Right. Or if it's just that, no, I connect, but I want this deeper, more intimate relationship. And then I wake up human and I go back into it and I'm like, but we're not there. We're not there. So I love how you said, go in and ask, what is the obstacle?
Yes.
And are there more, I don't know, are there more common obstacles that you hear that people tend to share? Or can you give us the example of what an obstacle might be? And then maybe how you would suggest people might be able to kind of break through that from I love you're like me, very practical in a very tangible way. Like, let's bring this down to earth a little bit to actually help people to move the needle forward.
Exactly. If the practices that you're using in your spiritual healing aren't working, then we have to inquire as to what else can we do differently. Right. I think that the biggest, how many obstacles present in the common issue is follow through. So follow through, self-commitment, showing up.
Right.
Right. I think many of us have a really strong, rebellious teenager inside of us. And we often let him
not
or her.
Me. I break my own rules.
Right. And so often our lives are actually being led by our rebellious teenager.
Yeah.
You know, like he or she is the one making the decisions, especially if we're activated and we go into defense mode or attack or
sure.
And so often when somebody's obstacle is follow through or commitment is showing up, we're going to go into the energy of that. So that might be, okay, where is it presenting in your body? What is it connected with? And just really recognizing the pattern and the belief. You know, I had somebody not long ago where what she found inside of her belly was, you can't make me. The words of, well, you can't make me. And it was, I mean, even how she scrunched up her face and said it. And so then in the session, we went a little deeper into, okay, who's that? You know, and it was like, right. I wasn't actually, it was a teenager, but it was also 6-year-old self. It was, and so recognizing that she was fighting something that was related to some unaddressed trauma from past. And yet that same fight was keeping her from participating in her life. Right. It was keeping her from engaging in things. It was going into this immediate state of judgment, of sabotaging follow through. You know, you have these great ideas. You know, for many people, it could even be as simple as the self-discipline of a physical practice, you know, going to the gym, running, things that we know are good for us, but then we make a decision that we don't have to. And so it's investigating again, why do we sabotage and not follow through what we know is good for us? Mm. What are we fighting? And so it's always going into the energy for that. And that part's different for everyone, Mandy, but
yeah,
that's a very common one. The other one would be purpose. People want their purpose. I don't believe that purpose is a thing that we can find. I believe it's how we live.
Yeah.
It's not out there. You don't have to go anywhere. Nobody has to tell you what it is. No one needs to define it for you. It's if we actually assume that we're living on purpose right now, mm-hmm. believe it, and then start to act that way, we get clearer and clearer in how source talks to us.
Mm, I love that. I love that. Yeah. Purpose is a huge thing. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar industry of take this course, attend this thing. We're going to tell you what your purpose is in life. And I'm with you. I mean, I think that we're either doing things on purpose or we're not doing things on purpose. And we feel the alignment, right? Which then brings the joy. It brings the fulfillment. It brings us feeling content in our lives when we feel like, well, I'm doing this purposely. I'm doing this intentionally, you know, whatever word you want to use. But I think people are so disconnected from what truly brings them joy. We are, many of us grow up believing that the most righteous thing that we can do is live these selfless lives that is for everybody else. And I think we also just really saw the highlight of that over the last few years, right? Is it's like, you need to make sure that you're constantly making choices for the betterment of the group, for the betterment of society, for the betterment of the collective, which in my opinion, completely goes against all of the messaging before that, which was put on your own oxygen mask first, make sure that you're feeding yourself, it's self-care, and then you are fit to be able to help and to serve other people. Right. So I think that there's a lot of conflicting voices that are coming at people right now. And I mean, I don't know if you see this. I see this just in the spiritual development world, the personal development world, is that people are so fucked up. They're like, I don't know who to listen to anymore. Like, what do I trust? And my answer is always yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what?
Yourself.
I'm thinking that's a great segue for where plant medicine comes through, is that we can have all of these different teachings and things that we've practiced and tried as far as our personal growth and spiritual development. And yet one of the beautiful things with the plant medicine is it helps us to feel into joy. It helps us to feel also the ways in which we've betrayed or let ourselves down or sabotaged. And it becomes such an ingrained sensory experience that when we go into the day-to-day, we know there's such thing as joy. Joy is possible. You know, you just laughed, let's say, for a half an hour, an hour during a psilocybin ceremony. Mm-hmm. And we know the feeling of letting ourselves down, because perhaps part of the vision was, here are all these promises I made to myself, and here's how I didn't show up. And so when we come home from that experience, the more that we endeavor to align we are with how we live, we have the opportunity to change that.
Absolutely. So I think that that is such a great place for us. I'm going to say start, even though we've already started, but I know Sarah, there's a lot of people who are listening to this podcast, and I really hope that there's a ton listening to this podcast who've begun to kind of, I don't know, just listen to a little bit of the dialogue around plant medicine, but have zero idea about it. They don't know where to start. They don't know the right questions. I know sometimes, you know, people will kind of whisper to me and they're like, you know, I feel really stupid and I feel really dumb because, you know, yeah, okay, I smoked weed when I was in high school, or I did mushrooms with a bunch of my friends, and they don't even want to ask the foundational questions around these things because, I don't know, they feel a bit silly even asking. So can you just give us even a little bit of a plant medicine 101 on your knowledge and awareness around it? Cause I say psilocybin and people are like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Right. Yeah. Right. Let's just go back.
So much of it is still so underground, and that's a big part of it, right? As far as sharing information. And I mean, that is changing in many ways. However, plant medicines are intuitive medicines. They help to engage your capacity to connect with your intuition. And it's almost like they turn a switch on inside of your body that enables you to remember how to listen to your higher wisdom. And now we're using the term plant medicine quite broadly. There's so many, as you said in the beginning, that have become popular nowadays. And for myself, I used to bring groups to the Amazon to work with ayahuasca. And in the last few years, I work with group psilocybin ceremonies, which is mushrooms, shrooms, medicinal mushrooms. And there are similarities between the two, most definitely. And all of them have their own unique spirit.
Yes.
And when I speak of ayahuasca, I'm speaking specifically of chacaruna and ayahuasca vine that grow in the Amazon. I've heard people reference other plant mixture blends that contain DMT as ayahuasca, and they're not ayahuasca. Because I've worked so much with many indigenous healers, you know, there's a part of me that believes it's very important to know what it is that you're, what is the plant medicine that you're taking? Where does it come from? What are the indigenous practices around it? What is its relationship with the land? Like, this is a real living thing that you're putting in your body. No different from the living things that we eat day to day. Those are living things too, but we've become so disconnected from our awareness of that, that plant medicine can help to enhance that. So psilocybin, I've worked with Wachuma or San Pedro as well, but primarily with psilocybin or ayahuasca. One of the things that psilocybin is great at doing is helping us to recognize on a more visceral level where we are holding trauma in our body. It doesn't tend to cause as much vomiting, let's say, as ayahuasca. And though ayahuasca is one of my favorites, I believe that it's important to have more caution in embarking on an ayahuasca journey, because we really do need to have a clean diet for 3 weeks to a month beforehand. And that's a whole other story. Yeah. Whereas with psilocybin, it is possible to have an experience on a weekend and integrate it into our day-to-day lives. I believe with ayahuasca is like a spiritual toilet brush is shoved into the center of your being and everything is scraped out. On the ground. And it's amazing. You know? And so whereas psilocybin is a lot more gentle, as much as it can be challenging, right? And I also recognize that plant medicine is not, it's not a fit for everyone. So it's important for people when they're deciding to embark on their own journey to be conscious of their own mental health. What is their historical patterns in rising to the occasion of challenges? How much do they allow fear to hold power over them? Are they able to be with what is uncomfortable? Because when we're uncomfortable, the only thing we have, Mandy, is our breath.
Absolutely.
And accessing that breath and using that breath.
Absolutely.
And, you know, a little bit of logic. Okay, I put something in my body and it's going to last 4 hours. That's helpful too sometimes. Yeah. And so what I notice is that we can find the places in our body very clearly where we're holding heavy energy, particularly in the last couple of hours of a medicine journey. And that's helpful for us to then inquire what movements can we do if it's in our fascia to shift some of the energy that's in our body. Is it related to a past trauma? right? To be in that state of what do I need to know about this? So I always encourage my participants to be open to that. Mm-hmm. And in everybody hosts a medicine ceremony differently. Mine are set up a little bit more traditionally, similar to some of the ayahuasca ceremonies, in that people are lying down and going inwards. It's a night ceremony, a dark ceremony. And I listen for the music or the sounds that come through. I'm often making up songs in the moment that feel like they're a fit for being with the energy that's in the room, whether that's helping it to rise up, whether that's helping some of the heavier stuff to move down, yeah, and to open our hearts. And so the primary intention is always for each person, how are you going to have your own conversation with spirit? And what do you need to feel prepared for that? You're going to talk to the highest power in the universe through your experience with this medicine. How will you show up in that space?
Oh, I love that. I love that. And you know, they always talk in plant medicine ceremonies about set and setting being the most important things, your mindset and then the setting that you're in. And it would make sense for me that in a psilocybin journey is that it's after, you know, the sun goes down, it's dark and you're going within, because think about where mushrooms grow, right? They grow in the dark. And also, I mean, for me, one of the things that I have really learned, and it's been confirmed for me, is that I don't need any help going up and out. My consciousness and my mind is usually like very expansive, which was part of why, you know, my fear was accelerated in my experience with MDMA. But psilocybin for me is very different because it is so grounded. And I think, and maybe I would ask you this question as being the expert here, for somebody who's typically very, very much maybe in their head or just even spiritually can very quickly kind of go out of the body, would you recommend then psilocybin to somebody because of, I mean, mushrooms, the mycelium network is what formulates the entire foundation, like underneath the earth that connects all living being systems, organisms, and forces on this planet, is that is so deep. And so that's what I feel, you know, when I journey with psilocybin, is that it's just an invitation for me to go back into my body and to feel almost like, I don't know, like I imagine myself like down inside of the earth, just being wrapped around by Mother Earth. And it feels like the most comforting, warm place to surrender, to feel safe, to see what's really there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's such a deep homecoming that's possible. Mm. And most definitely that presence. We can feel each part of our body. And some of that is practice. Like you have a long-standing meditation practice. That's really helpful for people, although not necessary.
Yeah.
What happens is that she helps us to recognize how we view reality. So the contrast, right? The heavy energy, the challenges, the struggles, the contrary, as well as the light. So she helps us to see that and then to recognize what we choose, because it is our thoughts that again, create that trajectory that manifests our reality. And so she really shows us. And with this being in our bodies more, we're less likely to be reactive. And so we're more likely to be able to witness what our habitual responses are. Mm. You know, so there's almost like she helps us to have that pause before activation. And we go, I had one of my own ceremonies around winter solstice. And one of the names that I had, you know, came up with during the journey for that energy of reactivity was the first responders. And I'd watch my body, I'd see something, and I'd observe this experience in my nervous system. I'm like, whoa, the first responders think that's really important. So, you know, and the first responder energy would be like, you know, you should do something. That's scary. That's this. And I just watched it. And I'm like, oh, that's real.
Yeah.
You know, and then my whole nervous system would soften and I would be more in my body. And it would happen again, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes later. And so she does. She gives us that opportunity to really be present, where we start to become more empowered because we see we don't have to be activated. Mm. We don't have to jump. We don't have to be in that state of nervous anxiety. We can actually be here. Chaos is always going to be happening.
Yeah.
I don't know if the times that we're in, Mandy, are any different than any other times.
Absolutely.
I know we think they are. And I know that I think in an egoic way, to some extent, we think that makes them more valuable, more prone to reactivity.
Sure.
Right? But chaos is always present. How do we be with that and still be rooted? And I think that grandmother psilocybin really helps us with that.
Absolutely. And I think, like, I have to say, I am so grateful that we are also advancing far enough where people can get into microdosing. So you don't have to go into these big, deep journeys, but it's being able to tap into some of these medicines on a day-to-day basis. It as an incredible alternative, dare I say, to pharmaceuticals.
Yes, right? Yes. Really helpful. And a microdose. I know many people and clients who microdose regularly, and some where it has become an alternative to antidepressants. And so something that is actually a lot more helpful for your body and engages that sense of presence without the same long-term side effects.
Yeah. So what would you say then, Sarah, because some of the things that I've heard from people with respect either to going into these bigger macro journeys or some of these micro journeys is that there can be that whole stigma, maybe that belief, well, this is drugs and I don't want to get addicted to drugs and this is drug abuse. And what would you say to that? People asked you about that.
And that's why there's so much underground still. There's some of that heavy energy around it is because our society is emerging through that belief system. And that is the judgment that's been placed on it for so long, right? I remember when my daughters first did the DARE program in school, right? Drugs awareness, I can't remember exactly what it stands for, and came home and I was bringing groups to work with the ayahuasca and the Amazon then. So I said, okay, we have to have a little talk actually about it. Like, you know, because they were right into it. Oh, mom, there's these bad things. I'm like, let's have a talk about this. And what I said to them is a little bit about what I'll say now is that there's things that we can put into our body that will help us to initiate or enhance our connection with who we are. They're plant medicines that they were put on this earth because Pachamama, Mother Earth, she knows more than we do, as does spirit. And so these things are medicines. So they're tools to be treated with respect. The more respect we bring to what we put into our body, the greater the experience that we'll have when we come out of it. And so if somebody has a lot of fear going into it, then likely it's a good idea to experiment on yourself with microdosing and to feel into, you know, bring it into a meditation practice. How does my body respond to this? What do I need to know about this? I have even guided people on a shamanic journey to connect with a plant medicine before they've ever put it in their body.
Absolutely.
So they can also have a little bit of an idea of what do I need to know about this? Address some of those fears because they're going to come up if you're in a macro journey. As you shared, Mandy, with us today, that will come up. If that's your biggest fear, it's going to be there. And so do you feel like you have what you need as far as resources to address that fear? And if not, you're not ready for a macro journey.
Yeah.
Right? Rather than jumping
absolutely.
In. And I would definitely say I had people who jumped in when I would go to the Amazon that weren't necessarily as prepared as they thought they were. So that was a teaching for me to vet people a little bit better as a facilitator, and that people do need a level of preparation that is essential beforehand.
For sure. And thank you for saying that, because I think it can feel very attractive. I think kind of twofold here. It can feel very attractive to be like, yeah, okay, that sounds cool. You know, I'm going to go and try that. And I see everybody else is having these great experiences. And so people kind of go in maybe a little too casual into these experiences. And then on the other hand, I see people go in where they're going in extremely desperate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they've tried everything and they are perhaps contemplating taking their own lives. And it's like, this is my last stop.
Yeah.
And this needs to work.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean,
no matter what, we're confronting ourselves. And so that
we always are.
Exactly. And so that's the most important piece for people to recognize is that it's not a thing to get away from who you are. You're going to confront yourself. You know, you're going to see the things that are hard or challenging or the things that have haunted you. And so know that, be prepared for that, that is part of the experience. It is not bad medicine because you saw what was hard. You did not have the wrong experience because you don't feel like you had this enlightened moment of connection to source. We always have the experiences that we're supposed to have. And if they bring up what is hard for us, perfect. Mm-hmm. Now you know what you have to address.
So I think therein lies the difference in terms of these medicines, these drugs and everything being kind of lumped into the same pile, is that just even neurochemically, there are those things that we can ingest that take us further away from ourselves, and they bring us more into a state of dissociation and a state of clouding the reality of who we are and the reality of what it is that is life around us. And then what we are talking about here are these medicines that actually bring you deeper into who you are. And I think it's really important to make that distinction so that the word that keeps ringing through my head is respect. And it's respecting the fact that these are medicines that are not meant to be used as a way to keep dissociating. If something feels painful, well, I'm just going to take, you know, another hit of heroin or like another hit on the crack pipe, right? Like,
or another drink.
Or to have another drink, right? Yeah. Or to engorge myself with food or whatever it is that we do. I think that that's part of the initial inquiry that is responsible for anybody who's going out seeking any type of pathway to move forward or essentially to ascend, is to get really real and honest with yourself and say, if I feel into this, is this something that's taking me further away, or is this something that's bringing me deeper into?
Yes. And exactly that respect. And so that's going to initiate self-respect.
Yes.
Right? I am going to go deeper into myself. So all of those other things you mentioned are things that numb us to feeling. So a plant medicine or psychedelic plant medicine is something that is going to help us to feel into. We need to be prepared for that. What's so beautiful about it is that, like, I think that these psychedelics have had their own secret agenda for a little while. You know, like, they're the ones that are helping humans to wake up and to come home to ourselves. When we come home to ourselves, we live in balance with the earth. When we come, she is our body. Our bodies aren't separate. So when we come home to ourselves, we're in that place of respect and reverence of what is. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not as focused on getting things done all the time and creating more stuff. We're in that place of shared humanity, of community development, of being with ourselves and celebrating what is. And so that's what the plant medicines help us with. The other stuff numbs us and cuts us off and keeps us trying to find more ways to not feel. Because if we feel, we have to stop and we have to look at ourselves and we have to make different choices.
Yes. And I think that's the key right there, is that these medicines bring you into the feeling of it. So hence the preparation. So you have to be prepared. And, you know, like with ayahuasca, and interestingly enough, I always get super nauseous when I'm with psilocybin as well. That's just me. But it is literally a purging for the stuff that we have been stuffing down and not wanting to feel. And I always know that when that happens, the more that I resist it, it's like, the medicine is there to say, Mandy, you can't hold this anymore. You've called a clearing, you've called awareness. And so I'm here now to take you by the hand and to hold your hair back and to let you, you know, get this part out. And it is a going in that way. But the thing that I also want to ask you about, Sarah, just to kind of share, because I have my own opinion on it, but I want to hear your opinion on it, is that, you know, sometimes we have kind of one school of people who will say, no, plant medicine is not addictive. In fact, sometimes it can be a one and done. You go in, you have the experience, you know, you got more than enough material to work with and to have a great life on the other side of it. And then I hear other people say, well, it's not necessarily the medicines that is addictive, but people can begin to become very dependent on the medicine, I suppose, to give them, I don't know. I can't even put it into words. Is it the courage? Is it the bump that they need to be able to do this work? Like, is there eventually a goal? If in fact that is true, is there a goal that as we use this as a place for greater revealing and greater introspection, is there a goal that we can start to integrate enough that eventually we're not reliant on plant medicine anymore to do that? Or I'm not really sure what your perspective is on all of that.
I think I have a few different opinions that are coming through, Mandy, and that have definitely changed through the years. I think one of the problems is that we can't blanket statement it, right? Like we can't put it into it's this or that, right? It's so unique and different for each person. What can happen is that people can become so mesmerized by the beauty and power of the ceremony, because it is beautiful and it is powerful, that their lives are almost on hold in between ceremonies. I've seen this where every few months, every 6 months, I have to have another ceremony. And I think that it's not that there's anything wrong with that. It's that the human has to ask themselves is, am I bringing this home? It's always that investigation. Am I doing the work that I need to do in the day to day in order to apply what I have learned from ceremony? The ceremony is a beautiful sacred space. And as humans, the whole point is, how are we allowing for what we have learned to integrate into our communities? Our job is to be of service to each other. That's why we're here. And so if we're isolating that experience only into plant medicine community, only into ceremony, we're not actually bringing it, allowing for that mycelium network, if you will, to weave its way out into the rest of humanity. And so I don't believe in the necessity to be in a separate system or community from the rest of the world. I believe that we all are the rest of the world, and we need to share what it is that we're discovering with each other in order to be supportive. I do believe that it's not for everyone. I am very respectful of mental health. And that's where I think that a really thorough investigation into one's psyche is necessary beforehand, and an evaluation of, do I have the foundational resources that are necessary to feel grounded and rooted in what comes to pass? If somebody has a fractured state of mental wellness, isn't even the correct term, but that's just what's coming to me right now, then there's likely of a possibility that that will become divided even further with plant medicine. So that's where that respect is in place. If a psychedelic experience is not the right fit, there's going to be other things. What's great is that where there is no scarcity, then there's something else that will help that person. I don't know if I completely answered your question, but just that place of, can people be addicted to psychedelic plant medicine? I think they're addicted to the sensory experience of ecstatic connection that comes forth. And we always need to ask ourselves, is in that connection to source, is, am I doing the work necessary to bring this home? Is this rooted in how I live my life? Am I impacting the changes so that in the day to day, I am aligning who I am with how I live?
Yes, I think you answered it beautifully, right? Because I think that's not even just with plant medicine. I think that's with everything. We have to ask ourselves, like, how's that working for me? Exactly. Right? How many times have you asked yourself that question, or have you said that to somebody else in your life? Like, how's that working for you? Yeah. Because if it's working, and who am I to judge, you know, what working is and what it isn't for somebody else? But if they genuinely feel that it's helping them to progress and to move the needle forward, then that's not my call. Right.
Where exactly. But if it's not working,
if it's not working, then let's talk about it.
Exactly. And I had a student for years who was part of the pursuing any kind of plant medicine that she could. And the work that she was doing with me, I used to do a 2-year shaman's path training, and we didn't use any plant medicine in the training. And one of the things that became a conversation was, are all of these ceremonies actually addressing the main issue? Because the main issue would still come up again, right? So the woundedness, as much as it would be cared for in the ceremony, the habit, the habitual pattern to be stuck in victim bondage in the day-to-day was so strong. Like, she needed more steps in her day-to-day.
Yes.
To address that patterning of victimization, to step out of that pattern. So it's important to recognize that we often need more than one tool and yes. to be open to that.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that, because I love how you said, just her coming back, is it actually addressing like the core intention,
the core wound. Still be there.
We can just come, we can dance around this every weekend if you want to dance around it.
Yeah.
But, and I think sometimes what I have seen, even in myself, I have been dancing around probably the same one for many, many years. And as a part of the dance, it's not that it's completely unproductive, because you dance and you bump into other things that are there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, and now I'm shit. Like, I got this that I need to look at and this that I need to look at. The thing that I had to be really real with myself about, though, is when I start to go into those kind of newfound triggers, is, am I actually going in because that's something that needs my attention? Or am I now going into that as a distraction from really looking at what is sitting and standing in the middle?
Yes. Yes. And that we can, plant medicine or psychedelic plant medicine can really help us in seeing those mm-hmm. habits or those patterns, right?
Yes.
I know that I can have a tendency to be almost like too thorough in my investigation of any dark or heavy energy that I'm carrying. So one of the things that, you know, I want to make sure that I did it. My old pattern, be got to get it right. You know, do a good job. Yeah. And so that would come up in ceremony and I'd feel this energy and start to go into it. And then the teaching was, you know, actually, you can be done.
Yeah.
Just like that. And you can actually choose another way. So we can come to a point also where I think we recognize we don't have to excavate anymore.
Yes.
You know, we can, it can be complete.
Oh, thank you for saying that. We don't need to keep picking at the same scab.
Exactly.
Again,
digging in,
give it time to heal.
Yes.
Give it time to heal.
Let it be.
So much in my line of work and in my community, is I keep hearing so many people say, I'm healing. And there's a few people who I love dearly. And I'm like, what would that feel like to say, not to say that I am healing, but to say that I am healed?
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't mean, to your point, it doesn't mean that we're going to achieve full enlightenment while we're here in our bodies, but like, how would it feel just to move on to something else?
Yes.
That
yes.
we don't need to keep digging into that thing.
Yes. And, you know, listening to something that Marianne Williamson said not too long ago, like, we are in this age where we've done so much focus on self, self-love, self-this, self, you know, that it's like we perseverated over it to the extent that we're obsessed. We need yes. to now focus on, like, hey guys, like, let's look at our world. Let's also yeah. put our focus somewhere else. And we can integrate and embody that love mm-hmm. by bringing it out into the world in real ways. That is not, once again, oh, I have to tend to, you know, my mother wound or my parental this or my,
yes.
you know, like, we are so privileged in Western culture with the power that we have to cultivate change on a societal level. And yet most of our time is spent in our self-work.
Of course it is.
Interesting.
It's also, Sarah, it is a part of our privilege, meaning that
yes.
I truly believe, back to the whole purpose conversation, is that if we're not feeling that we're doing something purposely, we will find something where we can assert purpose and meaning in our lives.
Yeah.
Right. And it just reminds me of that book, actually, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. I don't know if you ever read that book.
Yeah, I haven't read it, but
right?
I mean,
he kind of starts by using the example of, you know, this kind of older senior citizen person, you know, very retired person being in a grocery store and being really upset because they're trying to use this 30-cent off coupon and, you know, the cashier is not putting it through, right? And this cashier, like, who is this person? You know, like, they need to get a hobby, like, blah, 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 whatever it is. But realizing that sometimes these nitpicky things that we keep picking at when we don't have something bigger to focus on. And that's where I say part of the privilege conversation comes in. And of course, this is a generalization. I realize that, you know, not everybody has the privilege to just wake up and say, God, you know, today I'm going to do some self-care. Right. But I think if we have bigger things, just managing, like, how am I going to put food on my table today? Right. How am I going to, I don't know, escape maybe war or, you know, abuse, things that are around me. When we're not kind of sitting at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, just trying to like make it into a form of a bed that night, then we're really living our life in those kind of five, I call them like the five psychological needs that sit in the middle of the pyramid, that need to feel unconditionally loved, the need to feel like we're emotionally safe, the need to feel that we're connected and that we belong, the need to feel seen and the need to feel heard, is that whenever these needs aren't being met, that becomes our primary focus. How am I going to meet this need? And I think sometimes to our detriment, the more work that we do, the farther back we can go. You know, it's like, oh, well, so-and-so is not seeing me today, you know, or they're not hearing what I have to say. So now I'm going to go in with my excavator and I'm going to make this again, all the way back about my mother, my father, my grandparents, my first husband. And then we just stew. That becomes the purpose of the day, is to get in and behind that.
Yeah. And my past life.
Right? Like my future life, like, right? Like timelines don't exist. But, and I'm not saying that none of that is true, but back to the point of in me going back in and throwing this onto the road in front of me right now, is that really working? Is that really serving me? Or sometimes is it time to just move on? Like, you know, one of my girlfriends and I, we've both been in this whole personal development world for 25 years. And sometimes we laugh because we share this common friend who, you know, even the three of us can be out for a walk and one of us trips on a crack on the sidewalk. And it's like, what do you think that crack was there to teach you? I'm like, you know what? Sometimes it's just a freaking crack in the sidewalk.
That is it.
Whatever we want to make it about, but.
We need to lighten up. Yes, definitely. We can look for the signs and everything. And that using our privilege in a good way, I think, can be a question. I know I'll bring that into my daily practice. And like, how can I show up today? And the showing up isn't just showing up for me, like showing up for the universe, like how to allow that highest power to come through us and to embody that. So I think even that inquiry can help us to step out of that sensation that we're doing it all along and that there's so much to do. Often, Mandy, I think what happens is that we are also conscious of our own imperfections. And so that idea that there's still so much more to do, in parts that at some point we'll be done. And perhaps the more comfortable that we come to accepting.
Good luck with that.
Right. That we're never going to be done. You know, that we are this like rich, diverse duality of paradox, and that's okay.
Yeah.
The more that we can live in the moment and the more we can let go of accomplishing whatever we think our biggest self-help goals are, and that helps to be more present.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I think too, part of the privilege in being able to kind of share forward, if you will, is that this is one of the things that I tell, you know, my students, my people, even my own children all of the time. When I notice them really getting stuck in the healing journey or getting stuck in the victimhood of things, one of the greatest ways when they're like, I don't know how to get out of here, is I say, look back at everything that you've learned as a result of being here, right? What did you learn about yourself? What did you learn about other people? Now, even if you still feel like in the grubblies of it, you know enough at this point to share part of your story and to be able to help those who were, you know, you a year ago, you 10 years ago before you started this journey. And I think that's kind of that beautiful full circle moment where we begin to find back to purpose and meaning in our lives, as we can create meaning from the suffering, right? So whether you go in and you recognize what this is through a meditation, through a shamanic journey, through a breathwork journey, through a plant medicine journey, to me, that's a part of the integration that really allows us to take these quantum leaps forward in our lives and to release a lot of those kind of painful hooks that we hold on to. Because it's like, for me, I think knowing what I navigated and what I went through, I can't completely prevent if that's what's going to happen for my children. But what I can do is I can educate them differently, right? I can inform them differently. I can give them different tools and different strategies that will support them as they maybe hopefully kind of keep their mind a little bit more open to what, you know, what possible dangers are out there. And hopefully they'll live their life a little bit differently as a result of that. Which in a funny way kind of brings me back to your mom and kind of speaking full circle. And I would love for this to kind of be the this incredible grand finale of our conversation, is that whether your mom knew it or not, is that she really was preparing you for an incredible, and I don't know, I would assume that you would see it this way as I do, but probably one of the greatest spiritual gifts for you in your life was to navigate the trauma of her loss and of her passing. I believe that it has made you the you that I have, you know, very shortly grown to love and adore, is that your heart is wide open. You see all angles of yourself and of all people. You hold a deep compassion. You hold a lot of forgiveness. And not just because you woke up one day and decided, I just need to do this so I can move on. You've worked really fucking hard to do that and to get there. And I see that this is what you do for other people to be able to reconcile that within themselves. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to see that you have made so much gold and light from something that feels so shadowy and so dark, what would you share with other people who are still feeling that they're sitting in the dark, that they are still on either side of it, Sarah? They're feeling like the victim, but maybe they're also feeling like a perpetrator who cannot forgive themselves for what they've done.
I think that we have, that it's important that we keep it simple or small in our internal investigation to some extent, right? The bigger, or we partner that with the greater picture. And so at one end, it is the what may I do today that is simple? It could be, what may I forgive today, or what is keeping me from forgiving? What is inside of me today that I'm feeling in my heart center that is heavy that I may take a little peek at, right? It depends on where somebody is in their experience of trauma. And so for some, they might need to be the little peek. You know, I said to a client not long ago, what if forgiveness was in the periphery of your vision? It's not on the table yet, but what if forgiveness, what if you kind of get kind of to the side of your eye, okay, and slowly start to make a relationship with it. So the paradox is simultaneously, freedom exists. Freedom isn't anywhere else other than this present moment. Freedom is here. And so when we recognize that freedom is here, inclusive of anything that we have done, whether we have been perpetrated against or whether we are the perpetrators, freedom is still present. And so if we start to be conscious that this experience of freedom is present, and what keeps us from experiencing it is our own ideas, beliefs, fears, traumas. So I would encourage the person to start to be conscious of what is in the way of believing freedom is possible. What is that self-judgment, self-incrimination? Is that fear of somebody? I mean, Peter Bright Eyes represented my biggest fear for a very long time. That's why I knew I had to address him in my own ceremony, is I couldn't handle this feeling of him having power over me. And so anybody who has hurt us, if we haven't confronted that at some point, to some extent, they're going to have power over us. So what may we do within our day that is gentle and loving and possible to recognize that that energy exists and to bring it home into something that's practical, so that bit by bit we can start unpacking it? They can be making a list. It can be noticing it. It can be feeling it in our meditation practice. I said to another client not long ago, what if you felt it for just 10 minutes? What if you gave yourself permission to feel, this is the energy of this trauma that's still in my body, and for 10 minutes, I'm going to investigate what I need to deal with, or what I'm going to listen to it and be informed by it. So that's what I'd share with people, Mandy, is to notice the micro and start to form a relationship with the macro. None of us are cut off from our relationship to source, which is where I believe the infinite freedom is, except for by ourselves. And our ideas of whether or not we belong, whether or not we deserve, what the rules are, if we're spiritual enough, if we're whatever it is, our own fear of our failures and our imperfections. And so it's up to us to discern, how can we shift that? How can we experience the ever-present unconditional love that's available in the moment?
Yeah, because it is up to us, right? I think about things that I've done where I feel absolutely awful and terrible. And then somebody says to me, you know, I forgive you.
Yeah.
But until I've forgiven myself for that,
yeah, right,
that's the most important piece. Or if they haven't forgiven me.
Yes.
It still ultimately comes back to self-forgiveness. That's where the freedom lies, right? That's what I'm hearing.
That's where the freedom lies. It makes me think of, about maybe 6 or 7 years ago, Marilyn, and Marilyn is the sister of the person who killed my mom. She and I were speaking at the Edmonton Women's Prison, I think for Restorative Justice Week. And after we had done a talk and I shared the story of healing from my mother's homicide, and Marilyn shared about growing up in the with the generational impact of colonization and addiction. And at lunchtime, somebody came up to us, and you couldn't tell in the gymnasium that we were in if somebody was a staff, a speaker, or a prisoner.
Right.
So a couple of women came to sit with us, and we were chatting with them over lunch. And then one of them just looked at me and she said, you know, I never thought anyone could forgive a murderer. And she started to cry. She was probably in her 20s. Hey.
Yeah.
And so it came out that she had killed somebody, maybe 5 years prior than that. And simply just seeing us together and having us share opened this doorway in her heart of possibility, where it showed me that she was now starting to think about forgiving herself. And I was like, this is why I'm here today. This.
Yeah, absolutely. And who knows the ripple effect of you being there.
Yes.
That
time, yes.
Right. We just don't know. And I think, at the end of the day, this is about us freeing ourselves, right? So that our souls can grow and move forward. But it's the greatest gift that we give to others.
Yeah.
Is to live a life of forgiveness and to live a life of freedom. Because then what flows through us is love. It's not regret. Yeah. It's not rage. It's not anger. It's not shame. It's none of that. Right. So the being selfless for everybody else, to me, the most selfless thing that you can do is to be selfish. I don't know if that's the right word, but it is to take care of yourself and to do that work, to be introspective, to heal what needs to be healed. And then when you feel just steady and sturdy enough, you don't need to be like 1,000%, but just enough that you can kind of get a toe on the bottom of the lake. Then how can I now help to steady somebody else by sharing how I did
that? And that no one is going to do it for us. I think that's the other piece too, is that, I feel like in some ways in my 20s, I had been waiting for someone who had the answers. Surely there could be a book or something that I could find that could tell me what to do with this. And the truth was, no one, not a therapist, not anybody, could do that work of really coming home to myself and recognizing what needed to be addressed. And the same is true for all of us. Though we can have great healers and therapists and supports in our lives, we are still the only ones who care about ourselves or are invested 100% in the outcome, and the only ones who can really be honest. So it's up to us to allow for that honesty and vulnerability when we look in the mirror and we evaluate who we are and how we need to be with what has come to pass to bring us to this moment in time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for being one of those people. That support, that guide, and bringing the medicine that is you, not all of the accoutrement that goes with that, but the medicine that is you, bringing that into the world and this message, because I think that it is very timely. There's a lot of us on the planet who are struggling and suffering and, manic in our own ways and happy and joyful one day, and then anxious the next, it gets turned up too loud, and then experiencing the crash on the other end and trying to figure out, like, how do we regulate this and how do we come back? You said it 100 times today. How do we come back home?
Yeah.
How do we come back home? And that's really, that's the greatest message to, I think, to share with everybody here today, is that this is a message of coming back home. Yes. And even though home is there, it is always there for us. And we sometimes need the help of those who, you know, are the voices like, hey, it's over here, it's over here. Ultimately, we are the ones that have to get our legs going, right? Mm-hmm. Or our wheels moving mm-hmm. or turning mm-hmm. to actually take ourselves in that direction and trust that we will be held in absolute grace and in love when we arrive back home, right?
Yes.
Thank you, Sarah.
So thank for the you, people, Mandy.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you for the people who want to find you, reach out to you. You have an incredible book that I've actually just passed it to my daughter. She's just having a solo trip in Hawaii. And I'm like, here, read this first. Share a little bit about maybe your book, where they can find that. And then beyond that is it social media, website, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'd love to. The book is Trauma as Medicine. I thought I had my copy by me, but you can find it on my website. And so sarahsalterkelly.com is my website. For local people in Edmonton, most of the chapters have it, as does Audrey's, Ascendant, Bookstore. You can pick it up there. If for some reason they don't have it, tell them to get it back in. The work of a self-distributing author is never done. I am offering private sessions in Edmonton at Le Soleil Health and Wholeness and the Roots on White building. So you can come and see me there. I'm doing a free event actually coming up on March 2nd, a Trauma as Medicine Introduction. So for people who are interested in that, that's also in the Roots on White building. Come on up for that. It's at 6 o'clock, 6 to 7:30. And there's other workshops and events. I have a retreat coming up in Caslow, BC area in May. So all on my website, sarahsaltkelly.com.
Beautiful. And yes, so for those of you who didn't catch that, in BC, Sarah will do a beautiful group retreat. It's a psilocybin-led mm-hmm. retreat, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Beautiful.
Yeah. So just contact me for information about that.
Awesome. Awesome. And I will put all of your contacts in the show notes for this as well, with your website and all of the other good things, just to make it a little bit easier for everybody.
Okay,
thank you again, Sarah, so much for this very enlightening dialogue. I know that I was certainly enlightened by a lot of what you had shared here today, and I trust that everybody else was as well. And we'll have
to
do
this again. Thank you so much, Mandy, for having me here.
Again, for sure, my love.
Yeah, love to.
Take care. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Waking Up Human podcast. If you're looking for additional resources, anything from education on mindfulness, meditation, and just simply how to stress less, to engaging in a community, one where you can show up and be seen and heard and even get the insights from other people, as we all know that feeling like we belong and that we are connected is our one and only primary human need, then I have the place for you. You can join my membership community known as The Practice. And to find out more about this beautiful, supportive community that is filled with tools, resources, and all of the support that you need to lead a mentally strong and healthy life, then go to visit www.mandytrapp.com and learn all about The Practice there. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and to send this podcast to somebody else who you think could benefit from it. Take care.